Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by Dr. Carlo Bayraktarian.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Dev Nadek, the pastor of St. Sarkis Church in Douglaston, New York. Let us start our program in our day with a prayer from the prayers of the Armenian Church. Heavenly Father, true God, who sent your beloved Son in search of the sheep that had gone astray, I have sinned against heaven and before you. Receive me as the prodigal son, and clothe me with the original garment of which I was divested by sin. Have mercy on your creatures and upon me, great sinner that I am. This is a prayer of Saint Nerse Shnorhali, Havadov Hostovanim. In faith I confess. I hope everybody is having a great Lenten journey. Here at St. Sarkis Church, we've been having some really good discussions and lectures on Friday evenings of the Lent. And this Friday, it's really special because our youth club members will be presenting. And the topic that they have picked is about St. Gregory the Illuminator, the father of our kind of faith, because it was because of him that Armenia adopted Christianity as our faith. And this Friday, as I said, our youth club members will be giving the lecture, and they will talk about the life and the legacy and the importance of St. Gregory the Illuminator. It is something that I really encourage for our youth to know about their ancestors and how St. Gregory, a man full of faith, was able to bring that faith to our nation. And I'm happy that the kids are learning about it, because for me, when you teach, is one of the great ways that you also can learn. We're doing this Friday because on Saturday, the Armenian Church celebrates the feast of Saint Gregory, his descent into the pit. So it's not really a joyous occasion, because we know that with his descent into the pit, he was there for 13 years, and it was a period of torture and pain for him. But we know that out of that pain and out of those torture, the light of faith came to Armenia, and it is something for us to celebrate. And this Saturday, here, our New York community will celebrate this feast in a very special way. There is a special celebration of Divine Liturgy at St. Illuminator's Cathedral, and there will be also the consecration of the icons dedicated to the martyrs. So make sure that you attend this Badarak, because this is not something that we do every year. This is probably the first time that we are celebrating this Badarak, and we have almost all the clergy serving the churches of the Armenian Prelacy who will be present this Saturday. So if you have any clergy friends from out of this New York area, there's a chance that you will see them this Saturday. Make sure that you come and join us celebrating the Divine Liturgy this Saturday, but also try to make it here on Friday evening, because we will have our youngsters speaking about our church and St. Gregory the Illuminator. Under heaven, a time of love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace, a time you may embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. I was in Chicago last weekend because the Armenian Prelacy had organized a regional seminar for Board of Trustee members and NRA delegates. And this is the second regional seminar of this year. The first one took place in November, and it was for our region here in New York. And this was for the Midwest parishes. And I was one of the presenters, and I spoke about vision, and I spoke about forming certain strategies to make our churches more inviting and have a vision for us to think about the future. But prior to that, I also had a chance to spend time with my brother, who lives in Chicago, my parents, who are visiting my brother there, who are staying there, and my wife and I had a great time. It was a little time for us to do some sightseeing and spending time with family to re-energize. And Saturday morning, I think the seminar was really great, the regional seminar. And I hope that those who participated benefited from what the prelacy had to offer, because these are great opportunities for us to come together as parishes and to do a little brainstorming. Think about what are we doing. Think about the things that we can change and also plan for the future. So it's always a pleasure for me to be part of seminars like this when the topic of the discussion is the well-being of the Armenian Church.
To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to gain, a time to lose, a time to win, a time to sow, a time for love, a time for hate. I swear it's not too late.
Sunday, we are having our annual general membership meeting. This meeting is taking place once a year, and it is during this meeting that we discuss all the events and the activities of the past year, and we also plan for the following year. The elections also take place during this meeting, so it's an important meeting for all the members of St. Sarkis Church to attend. If you are a paid member, we invite you to attend to examine the work of our church and bring your input in planning the future of our church. It is taking place right after church services this Sunday, March 13th. I hope I will see you there. I posted a video on our Facebook page. It's about the use of technology in our churches. As I told in the previous episode of the podcast, this video was upon the request that I received from the Armenian Catholicosate of Cilicia that the youth department was doing a seminar on church and technology, and they wanted us to give them a report, a video report, about how do we utilize the technology. And we thought, oh, this should be something that we can do easily. But little we knew that we had to spend almost half of the day trying to record. And I have a producer, Mr. Greg, who is very detail-oriented. He wanted to have the perfect shot, and I think he did a great job. So I posted that video for you to take a look and see some of the things that we are doing here. And I look forward to hear your comments. If there are things that you think that we can implement the use of technology here, we are open for your comments and for your suggestions. Post a comment on Facebook, or you can reach us directly using our email, fr.narek@gmail.com. Our guest today is a person to whom I have a great deal of respect. She is Professor Marilyn Martone, PhD, and I happened to be her student when I was attending theological studies at St. John's University, and she has influenced me with her way of thinking and all the materials that we covered with the courses that I took with her. Initially, I was planning to take one course, but we ended up taking three courses, and it's been a great pleasure. And Professor Martone has been here in the past in our church, and she has spoken about various topics. And the last time that she was here, she presented her book, which is called Over the Waterfall. Professor, welcome back to St. Sarkis Church, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So it was 2011 when this book came out, and you were here and you spoke about this book. And one of the things that I still remember that this book was about your spiritual journey. Tell me, where are you with that journey now?
Oh, my spiritual journey continues. The book is about when my daughter got hit by a car and my world was turned upside down. And going through that experience, I struggled. And what I struggled with was I was not trying to cope. I was not trying to deny. I was not trying to make it better. I was trying to find meaning. Where do you find meaning when such a tragedy happens, when you have a beautiful, intelligent, Phi Beta Kappa daughter one minute, and the next minute you have a severely brain-injured daughter who needs 24-hour care? And what is God trying to tell me? Where can I find God in the midst of this whole thing? And the concept that carried me through that whole experience and still carries me through is that concept of gift. The fact that my daughter was a gift. She's not mine. I meant to care for her. And she's not a gift because of any characteristics that she has. She is simply a gift because she has been given to me by our God. And coming up with that concept, which I knew about, but I really internalized it from writing the book and from going through this experience, makes you realize that everything you have is a gift. It is not yours. It is meant to be shared with others. It is meant to be developed. It's meant to be protected. And it's a whole different way of looking at the world. You know, as we're going through this political climate, we hear very little talk about gift. We act as if everything is ours, that we shouldn't share with others. We should keep it to ourselves. But living with not only my daughter, but she has taken me and my family into the world of disability, a world I probably would not have entered on my own. And just understanding, you know, for someone who's not in that world, it's probably very hard to understand how much joy there is in being in that world and being there with people with disability, because all the pretenses that so many of us live with are absent. Many of them are very, very joyful people. And so my journey continues. I constantly am trying to find moments of joy in my life. And that's not to deny the fact that it is extremely, extremely hard, difficult work that I do every day.
You're talking about gift. You're talking about joy. And, you know, these are topics that me as priest and in academic circles, we conceptualize these topics. We talk about them as abstract ideas. But in your life, this is your reality. And when we talk about gifts, gift is always something that is very pleasant that you receive. You don't think about the responsibilities that you have to maintain that gift. You know, but for you, having that idea of your daughter is a gift, but then again, you are devoting your entire life becoming a caretaker. But not only that, you're still finding joy in, as you said, entering the world of disability. My question is, how do you reconcile all of that, the abstract with the reality?
I think before this happened, I had the abstract from my studies. All right. And on the plane ride to Chicago, my daughter was hit by a car in Chicago. I asked myself, I said, I go into the classroom and I teach that children her gifts. Now, do I really believe it? And by the time I got off the plane, I knew I really believed it. And it just, it was a letting go of control. It was a letting go of, and it's not that I got more spiritual. It's just that I realized, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know if she's going to live. There's absolutely nothing I can do to keep her alive. I can only be present to her. I can only be there. And I think so often when we live our lives, we think, well, how can I control this? What can I do to make it better? How can I change things? And sometimes we just need to be. We just need to be present. We need to be open. We need to listen to the other. And when we do that, we learn so much.
I think your experience is very unique because you are not only a loving, caring mother who is taking...
I don't know if everyone would say that.
But you also have that theological background, strong background, where you can reconcile the two worlds, you know, the motherly love with our faith and the theology. So your book is a fascinating read, and I read it, and the copy that I have actually is the one that it was given to my wife by you, and we have your signature here, and she read it also. And we had a discussion on this book. And one of the things that, you know, she verbalized about this book was that this is something very heavy. In our lives, you know, when we witness things, when we read a book, we watch a movie, we are always trying to find a resolution. We're trying to find the conclusion of the whole thing. Your book, it's kind of open-ended. And this teaches me that, you know, not everything in life, you know, has a beginning and an end. But there are times that, as you said, we need to be present at the moment. And it sounds like that is what's happening in the content of the book. Do you think that a person who is dealing with any kind of grief in their life will benefit from reading your book?
I would hope so. I would hope so. But I know, I thought it would be a really good seller for families who have someone in similar situations. And what I have found instead is it's too painful for them to read. A lot of them have said, I couldn't get past the first chapter. It brought up so much pain for me. But I think part of that is we live in a society that tells us we're always supposed to be happy. You know, we're also always supposed to be cheerful and go into denial if things aren't going our way. And we've lost the ability to deal with the heavy things of life, as you said, and the real things that happen in our lives. So often, you know, I've just given a couple talks on family, and I think so frequently when we think of the ideal family, what we're really thinking of is the ideal family is put forward by society, which is everybody listens to mommy and daddy, everybody does what they're told, and everybody is happy all the time. when we read scripture, that's not the family that we find. We find a brother killing a brother. We find fights in the family. We find people not getting along. And this is what real family life is about. You know, how do we cope? How do we continue to love in the midst of the pain, the suffering, and everything else that goes on in our life? And it's not always putting a veneer of, you know, sheer happiness on it. It's really getting down deep and dealing with the issues and not going into denial about the issues. So many people just go into denial, I think.
Well, that's our defense mechanism. Our brain tells us to stop worrying and to just try to be normal. But we know denial doesn't work. It will come up. And that's what happened, obviously, when people were reading your book and their personal stuff was coming out. And it was bringing a lot of baggage that they were carrying without knowing. But going back to the point that you made, how can you love in the midst of all sufferings that we face?
Well, because I think love is not just a feeling. I mean, love is a commitment that you make to another person. And taking that concept of love back to the concept of gift, you know, the importance of gift is there's a giver, there's a receiver, and then there's a bond that is made between the person who gives, the person who receives, and the gift. So when my husband and I had this daughter, this was our child, and we were bonded to her. And no matter what, we need to learn how to be present, to stay with. To me, that's what love is. It doesn't mean that there aren't days that I don't want to kill my husband, you know, or that I'm not disappointed with my children, or that I wish my daughter was better. Certainly, there's many days like that. But for me, love is I stay there, and I work it out, and I try to help all of us get a little bit better. It's not so much, you know, this smiling, lovey-dovey kind of thing, but it's a real commitment of no matter what happens to you, I will be there.
So where do you get your strength from? Because, you know, letting go and accepting the fact that a family is messy, and there are not every family, you know, is what is portrayed on TV. And happiness is not when children listen to their moms. But when you go through the daily struggles, just being a caregiver to your daughter, I'm assuming that must take its toll on you. Where do you find your strength to carry on?
I find it in many places. Certainly, my faith grounds me. I don't know how people go through this without a belief in God and the fact that I have a God to turn to when I need resources. I find other people carry me through. I have wonderful friends and family who bolster me, who carry me up. I find, especially with my daughter, the people who work with people who have a brain injury, therapists, aides, are very special people. They're not doing this type of work to make money. I mean, they're dedicated, devoted people. I find it in the people with disability. I myself am going through an issue with my knee, and I've been going to therapy, and because I know the therapist who works with my daughter, I go to him. So I'm in the neurological part of that therapy, and looking at these people who can't move, who have difficulty doing anything, and who have smiles on their faces, when people who are wealthy and have so much are going around, you know, complaining around everything, I find my strength in the weak.
That's very powerful. There's a transition I'm seeing. You were the caregiver all the time, and now you're a recipient of care because of your knee injury. How does that feel? The change of roles?
I wish I'd get more help. But I more or less have to keep going, you know, because my husband is also disabled at this point. And so it raises all kinds of issues. We are really more or less now a disabled family. My daughter's in a wheelchair, my husband's with a walker, and I'm walking with a cane. But I think also what helps us get through is our sense of humor. You know, when my husband was He had a bad fall and injured his spinal cord and was in rehab in a wheelchair. Well, what did we do? I put my daughter's wheelchair in front of him. He pushed her and I pushed him, and we had a wheelchair train going. You have to find the humor. You have to keep going, making fun, you know, and enjoying, finding joy wherever you can find it. You know, and I remember reading Tuesdays with Maury.
One of my favorite books, yeah. By the way.
And he was dying. And there was a point in there which I find so applicable to my life. And he said, as your world shrinks, there's more depth to what you have. So you will see, you will spend so much more time just looking at a bird because you have no place that you can go. And you're sitting there. And in the mornings, you know, when I'm just sitting there looking out the window, just appreciating the trees and the birds. And because my days of traveling all over the world are over, more or less. But the joy is in a different place now. But there's always joy. You have to look for it.
So Professor Martone, this year has been proclaimed as the Year of Mercy in the Roman Catholic Church. Tell us about the Year of Mercy, and how do you think it is affecting, or it should affect, the life of an average parishioner who goes to any Roman Catholic church?
Well, one of the descriptions of mercy, which actually I read in a book that was written by my mentor, a Jesuit priest, Father Keenan, basically describing mercy as entering into the chaos of another. And that, I think, fits so well with what we were just talking about before. Not running away from the people or the incidences in our life which are painful and we wouldn't want to be with, but actually being present to another who is in pain themselves. And that's not always easy to do. How do we open ourselves to other people? How do we open ourselves to God? So much in life depends on that openness, but with openness to others comes vulnerability, comes the ability to be hurt, comes the ability to have other people do things to us that we would not necessarily want done. And yet, certainly as Roman Catholics, this is what we are called to do, to go out into the world, to engage the world, to change the world, not just to go into our little enclave of security. So mercy, I think, takes us out of our areas of security. You know, and so much of what we see going on in the world now is you can have this purity, you can have this, everything fits in place, but in many cases you have that by eliminating all the messiness in life. Mm-hmm. And just focusing on what fits. And if someone comes along who doesn't fit in that mold of yours, well, they're not acceptable.
Can you give a specific example? Because I think we need something more concrete here to get your point.
I think, for instance, even what we're seeing going on in the political situation now, immigration, they're different. You know, they're not, of course, we're all different, but we see people afraid of strangers. We see people who speak a different language or think a little bit differently than we do or express their religion differently than we do. And so we want to keep our purity and our identity, and we lock them out. We block them out. And yet there's so much that others have to offer us. And it's only by accepting this difference from us and appreciating this difference from us. We see it in families. We see it in communities who we only want to associate with people who are like us, who think like us. And that's not what our God is calling us to do. We're called to be open to, because everyone is a child of God and made in the image of God, regardless of their religion or their race or their background or their nationality. And how can we be inclusive? I mean, I think politically, that's what we're really struggling with now, because the demographics are changing. We're afraid of difference. We don't know how to accept it. Are we, those in power, going to be losing power? And they're frightened. They're scared. But our God tells us, don't be afraid. be open, accept, learn, love, be merciful.
It's very interesting that when you were speaking about being merciful, the first thing almost that you said was, or relating being merciful to being vulnerable. And vulnerability is something that I remember you talking a lot about in your classrooms. What are the benefits of vulnerability in our spiritual life?
I don't think you can be open to others until you've come to terms with your own vulnerability, because I think love makes you vulnerable. And you can't love unless you come to terms with your vulnerability. You won't be open to the vulnerability of others. So I think we all, and maybe that's a good project for this Lent, you know, to come to terms with our vulnerability, to recognize our weaknesses. Because when you recognize your weaknesses, you also recognize that you need others to help you. In many cases, isn't that what marriage is about? We see someone who compliments us. You know, it's someone who has the strengths we don't have. You know, my husband's constantly telling me I think too much, which I do, but I can't help it.
What are you saying about your husband?
My husband would much more just rather enjoy life and not think about all these different problems that are existing in life. And I take on the burdens of the world, and I know that, you know.
But you do that with such a great sense of humor. It's something that I've always liked and appreciated in knowing you. So let's go back to the book and tell me how the book was received since its publication.
It's been received well. The name of the book, by the way, Over the Waterfall, I took that. I gave that name because I used William James's concept that we have a stream of consciousness. And I said, when somebody suffers a traumatic brain injury, it's like that stream of consciousness goes over a waterfall. It's the same water at the bottom, but it's fractured. It needs to come together. It needs to form a new identity. And in a way, you don't even have to have gone through a traumatic incident for that to happen. We're constantly reforming our identities, you know, developing, becoming in new people. You know? So the book, I would say the book has been well received in academic circles. Right? The book has been received well. The area where it hasn't been received that well is medical circles. And by the way, when I wrote the book, I set up a limited liability corporation because I do mention hospitals in there.
You do. Okay.
So, but that, for me, that's part of the truthfulness, you know, and part of healthcare. We need to, and I think the institutions of healthcare need to come to terms much more with their vulnerabilities as well. And I know they're afraid to because of liability, because of lawsuits, etc. But unless we come to terms with something has gone wrong here and who's responsible, we're not going to be able to fix it.
Sure.
And so much of the healthcare system now depends on insurance rates and profitability, and the care of the patient is almost secondary in many instances, which is very discouraging, very discouraging.
So it was not well received in medical circles?
It hasn't been received as well as I thought it would be received. Like, a lot of physicians said, oh, we can't wait for this book to come out. We need something like this because we need it from a parent's perspective. But then when the parent's perspective came out, I didn't think they liked the parent's perspective.
Right. But, you know, when you presented this book here and the people who bought it, and then we had a little discussion, I think it was, at least here in our parish of St. Sarkis Church, this book was very well received because, you know, people were able to look at suffering. And as you said, that brought a lot of their own personal stuff. And that's a good thing. So, I don't know, I wouldn't focus only on the academic circles, but I would say that this is a perfect read for everyone, you know, to take a hard look what's happening inside and try to examine their lives and their values. And from that perspective, I would encourage all of my listeners to try to get a copy of this book and read it before Lent is over, right? Because this is a perfect time for us to do some reading and try to strengthen our spiritual life. So tell us, where can we find your book?
The book is available at Amazon.com.
It is called Over the Waterfall.
It's also in Kindle form, if anyone would rather have an electronic copy.
We will put a link on the page of our podcast so that our listeners can access it easily. Professor Martin, before I let you go, what is your message to our listeners today?
I guess my message would be joyful no matter what. There's moments of joy everywhere, and look for them closely, even if it is Lent.
It's a great message. We'll take it, even if it's Lent. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for driving here to our parish of St. Sarkis Church. And we look forward to seeing you and for you to share your wisdom with us.
And thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. Let's do the Bible reading and reflection now. Today's reading is from the Gospel of St. Matthew, chapter 16, verses 24 through 28. Then Jesus told his disciples, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or will they give in return for their life? For the Son of Man is to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay everyone for what has been done. Truly I tell you, there are some standing here who will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." The word of the Lord. This is one of the most difficult parts of the New Testament for us to understand, and I certainly do not claim to have knowledge to explain every word that we read, but I can give it a try. This is a conversation that is happening between Jesus and his disciples. And Jesus is telling his disciples about how to become a true follower of God. And he breaks it down to us to know that if anyone wants to follow Jesus, first, we need to deny ourselves. Self-denial. It's something that we can talk about a lot, but practicing self-denial is not an easy thing. Because we are all people who every time and every occasion in our life, we are trying to make sure that our opinions, our way of thinking is respected and we matter. But here we come and see Jesus saying the opposite, self-denial. I guess what Jesus is talking about here is humility. The fact that we need to be humble. We don't need to put ourselves, you know, to be the first priority in life. We need to come to understand that the world does not evolve around us and that we are just part of the creation. So having that correct perspective about who we are is very important for us to become a follower of Jesus. The second point that Jesus makes is we need to take our cross. Taking the cross is not, Jesus is not talking about certainly a piece of jewelry that we hang around our necks, but no, it's about all the sufferings that any Christian will go through in their lives. See, sometimes we are fooled by the notion that once we become to know God, God will save us from all kinds of evil. Well, that is a very childish way of thinking. You know, we teach that to our children. But in reality, we know that there have been so many times that we've asked God to save us, but we kind of were left alone. And there were sufferings. I don't think anyone has not gone through sufferings, and I don't think anyone who's listening to the show right now has never asked, why me? Why is this happening to me? But we see that Jesus is saying, as if, you know, sufferings are a kind of condition, are conditions to, or it's part of the conditions to become a follower of Jesus. So what Jesus is saying, I think, that there's a great value in suffering, and that when we go through troubles in our life, we grow and we become better people. So suffering is not a bad thing. It's in our nature. We try to avoid suffering all the time. But when we look at it from a Christian perspective, from the spiritual point of view, we see that those are challenges for us, then those challenges will make us better people. And eventually Jesus says, follow me. In Jesus, we have a great example. If we need to know what is the best way to have a life, what is the best way to live the spirituality of our faith, then we need to look at Jesus, because in Jesus, we can see the perfect example. So I think this is a great roadmap that shows us that anyone who wants to be a disciple of Jesus, there are things that we need to do. We need to make sure that we are humble human beings and we are accepting sufferings in our life and that we are followers of Jesus. Today's hymn is called Voros Chorut Ko Kalosian. This is a hymn that we sing on the Sunday of Advent. This Sunday, by the way, is called Sunday of Advent. It is about the second coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. And the hymn is just a beautiful hymn that depicts the mystery of this day. I hope you will enjoy listening to this hymn, Voros Chorut Ko Kalosian. We will be back soon. I would like to thank all of my listeners, our sponsor, and our producer, Mr. Greg Doster. I pray that the peace of our Lord Jesus Christ will always be in your hearts. Amen.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Dr. Carlo Bayraktarian. If you'd like to sponsor future episodes, please contact the St. Sarkis Church office at 718-224-2275.